All right. Thank you, Mark, for being here. Welcome to the Curious Expression podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It is an honor to meet and speak with people who are like-minded, want to explore maybe other perspectives.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a pleasure to have you here. So to get started, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about yourself. So for people that don't know who you are and what you're about, could you just kind of describe to us what you do?
I am a Celtic Norse shaman. My mission in life is to help folks who have suffered some extreme trauma, psychological trauma, helping them to kind of restore their lives and get back to some semblance of normalcy, whether it be a new normal or a comfort level that they're okay with operating in, and to try to rekindle the joy and love that they had before this traumatic incident. In addition, I also spend a lot of time, because as a shaman, I don't really recognize per se a one-shoe-fits-all type of belief about religion. I'm pretty free to open to work with many, many different wonderful people around the world, in an understanding from my perspective of spirituality. And of course, me absorbing their perspective allows me to have that kind of a bigger picture. So working with people all around the world, I have the wonderful honor of interacting with some great and wonderful people.
So why specifically did you become a Celtic shaman? What's the significance of the Celtic?
Well, I'm actually Norse by birthright. I have 54 generations in northern Denmark. So by birth, I have no choice but to be. But if we investigate the Norse and we learn more about where their beliefs came from, why did they believe in what they believed, and why was it so strong? We can dig all the way back to where we'll find an exit out of the Iberian Peninsula in Europe of the Celts, where the Celts moved. Initially, they moved east, and then some of them moved north through what we know today as Germany. Those folks would go on to be crossing the Elbe River into the Jutland of Denmark, and those would be my ancestors of long time ago. And so we see, if you look at many of those pre-Christian beliefs, particularly there in Western Europe, we find a kinship, right? They're very much a very similar, because we're boiling away all the fluff, and we're arriving at a similar truth. And when we get there, of course, we find that some of those truths are evident in all belief systems. So the Celtic Norse part is simply a nod for my ancestry.
Okay. And what is some of that similar truth that I guess both backgrounds kind of are trying to get at?
Well, I think, you come to a spiritual understanding, right? And you come to this understanding, I think, that everyone arrives at. And that is that, the deities, whatever names you want to apply to them, are going to apply energies that interact with us every day, every minute of every day. And we, as physical forms, as the human embodiment, our job, if you will, is to simply learn to understand that. Learn to understand those influences and to make choices for our lives, for our experiences, both future looking and in the past, based on those influences and those experiences, so that we can grow as people and become more love-centric, more sharing-centric, more harmonious with our fellow man.
And originally you used to be a Christian pastor, correct?
I was.
So was it a difficult transition going from Christian pastor to Norse Celtic shaman?
No, it wasn't for me.
Okay.
I say that because many people, of course, were offended and condemned me to their proverbial hell, if you will. I was actually quite abused and assaulted, both me and my family, as we left the church. My wife, of course, still being a very strong Christian woman, very much akin to that, I found holes in the doctrine. And that's where I was kind of searching for answers. And I'm an intellectual, so I need to pick things apart. And I need to understand, you can't come to me. And while I understand faith and I understand the value of faith, there has to be some truth to the faith. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not going to believe, you know, I'm always reminded of the, if you've seen the movie, what's it named? Indiana Jones. And I think it's the third one with his father, Sean Connery. And they're going through this adventure or whatever into finding this treasure. And in the quest to get to where they're going, they find a bridge that's technically invisible.
Okay.
Right? And because it's painted to look like you're looking down in the cavern. And okay. So it's literally invisible. And the book that he's reading, and it says you have to take this leap of faith and a step of faith, right? And he steps out, and of course, he lands on this bridge. That's very much akin, that's kind of the idea for me, is that I don't mind having faith, but I need the bridge. Mm-hmm. And the greatest gift to me as an individual, as I watched that, was when once he'd gotten over the bridge, he took a handful of like sand and rocks and scattered it across the bridge so that he could see it.
Mm.
And so it was this truth for him, that particle of truth, that bridge existed. It wasn't, you know, purely the magic that had carried him over this chasm. It was this real bridge. But again, it's I need basis in fact. And so there was a lot of doctrine holes. The more I dug into monotheism as a whole, particularly the mainstream monotheists, I kept discovering more and more doctrine holes that just, it wasn't clicking for me. Mm-hmm. And even though I tried and I endured, you know, I studied and I prayed and I studied and I prayed, there kept these nagging thoughts that I kept having. And finally, it just dawned on me is like, why am I rowing this boat upriver? And that's what I was doing. I was rowing against my ancestral current. And once I decided to stop it, for me, again, as I mentioned, now I just go with the current. I roll with what the universe and my spiritual entities, what their plan, you know, what are we doing? Well, here we go. And so I kind of enjoy the ride now.
Mm-hmm. And so when you decided to become a shaman, was there like a process that you had to go to? For example, I read something about that. There's like a sworn oath that you have to take.
There are so many definitions of all these labels. Okay. You know, I think about my time in the Christian church where becoming ordained to be a minister, to be this, to be that. Yet nature has no levels. Nature doesn't say you're human enough to be a human. It doesn't say that guy over there is a tree and he's tree enough to be a tree. These labels are just a construct of the human mind. I don't believe in it. What I do believe is the word shaman and the understandings behind being a shaman is that we are called by the spirits to do what we do. Mm-hmm. We receive spiritual enlightenment through one form or another, and we're given the gift of translating that for others, that they may use it in their lives and better themselves and grow themselves if they so choose. Mm-hmm. Whereas the difference when we talk about shamans and our practice versus Christianity, I would explain these things and I would tell you have to do these things to be okay, to be good, to be, you know, to meet some bar. Whereas as a shaman, I simply say, here's the path, but you have to walk it. Mm-hmm. So you can choose it or not. It's up to you. It's your choice. It's where you are spiritually that will decide your path. And so others started calling me a shaman. And so I just kind of rolled with it. And okay, that works.
Yeah.
Again, about the only thing I don't like being called is late for supper.
Yeah, I don't think anybody wants to be late for supper. You mentioned spiritual entities a few times. So who are these spiritual entities that are part of this Norse tradition?
Well, don't confuse labels with spiritual entities. Spiritual entities surround us all the time. You know, we all, as you know, all of us have a spiritual core. We have a spirit within us, each of us.
Yeah.
Everything on the physical plane, on the earth, on the moon, on the sun, anything that has a life force in it has a spiritual entity, has a spiritual connection.
Okay.
And then there are those things on the earth that may not have a physical form. They may simply be spirits of deceased ancestors, spirits of other spirits who have not adopted a physical form yet. All of these, not to mention, or in addition to, the original forms that we refer to as the deities. Okay. As far as Norse legends go and Norse lore, you know, when you throw out names of Odin, Thor, the like, particularly with the newfound fame in Marvel Comics, we have a lot of names. When you think about Celtic to Norse, in Celtic, the main god was a man named Dagda. He is the primary Celtic god. Dagda, if you know his description and know about him, you can see the transference from Dagda to the Germanic Wotan.
Okay.
All right. Now, Wotan, of course, being very popular, and of course, there being in Germania, wound up being so popular that we named the day of the week after him. And of course, that would be Wednesday, Wotan's Day.
Oh.
And so, but Wotan would then evolve, and you can, you know, by reading history, of course, you can see the evolution of where Wotan is now described in a different language as Odin.
Mm.
He becomes what the Norse, the northern Germania would refer to as Odin. So when we see labels, there's a couple of things that we always have to, and what I mean by labels is names, right? So whether you're talking about Odin or Zeus or Anubis, whether you're talking about Osiris or the great creator, Yahweh, Allah, Buddha, all of them, they're simple names that are limited, very limited, physical mind grasps. Mm. We have to call things something. It's what we do.
Yeah.
And the more people agree with what we call something, it becomes that, right?
Mm.
But before it's that, it's who knows, right? It's, oh, that thing over there or that other thing. And it's not until we start applying these labels that our conscious mind has a methodology at which to draw attention to that item. Mm-hmm. Which is why, you know, I certainly give credit to Odin and to Freya in my life, but only as their energy, right? That's all I recognize, really. And the nod for the names is simply a nod to my ancestry that says, I recognize your influence into my life, and this is how I do that.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Okay. Totally understand. Okay. Yeah.
I'm not big on names, in case you haven't noticed.
There was one, I guess, well, I'll call it a name maybe, that I came across when I was researching you, and I'll try my best to pronounce it. Ulfidnar? What does that mean?
Close, close. You got Ulv, OOLV, Ulv. Heth is HETH, and then NAR. And Ulfhethnar, those were warriors, according to Norse legend. And of course, it runs in my family. My 53rd great grandfather was Ulfhethnar. And what they were is they were men who had been contacted with, communicated with, and bonded with spirits of wolves. And so Ulfhethnar is simply the Old Norse word that means wolf pelt. Probably a more popular word you're used to that everybody knows is our brothers who bonded with the bears, and they were the berserkers. And the berserker, of course, being in lore and on television all the time, were these kind of brutal, powerful men who just stomped everything and just ran through like elephants through a forest, right? And that was basically because they had bonded with that animal, and that's that fighting style of that animal. Wolves, the Ulfhethnar, were more cunning. They hunt in packs, they are very intelligent, and they were able to subdue the same prey, yet much more cheaply to themselves, right? They didn't get hurt as much. And they were able to do it because they did it in packs. They fought very tactfully. And so the Ulfhethnar and the Berserkers are listed in a multitude of sagas that pretty much documents the Norse history. Probably their claim to fame came when King Harald Haarfagri unified all of Norway, and he used the Ulfhethnar and the Berserkers as kind of his shock troops. They were the special forces, and they shook things up ahead of the main army. And so he would go on to, of course, unify Norway many years later. But so that's kind of where their claim to fame comes from. But again, it's a very one of the things that comes with being Ulfhethnar is that we're associated with the spirits of the land. And in Old Norse, that word is Landveti. The Landveti, or spirits of the land, would actually fight alongside the Ulfhethnar in battle. And what that meant was, as an opposing army, the ground could swallow you. It would become all mushy and just bury you right up to your waist, in which case you were kind of fair game. Or you would have a rock slide or a storm or trees that fall over on your caravan. Something, in effect, what we're doing in that case is the Ulfhethnars called upon the Landveti to kind of set the stage before the armies got to them. So that's by legend and lore, of course.
I get the feeling that the Avengers missed a lot of this stuff.
They had to be very careful. Of course, you don't want to. There are a lot of groups. There are groups of active Ulfhethnar, particularly in Europe, and you probably don't want to offend them. Yeah, so it's still an active thing. They were outlawed in the 1200s when the Christian Church came. Primarily, the first time we actually see it in law was in Iceland in the 1200s. And they were outlawed and hunted and killed, murdered for their practices. I have four great grandfathers that were murdered in this way.
Well,
Many,
sorry to hear
many,
that.
many. Oh, well, you know, I can honestly say I had no idea who they were until a couple of weeks ago. So, but we see that, as kind of an idea that these men were capable of something, right? And according to, of course, my family lore, yes, they were pretty powerful beings and not one to be trifled with. When they weren't in battle, of course, they were shaman They were the healers. They were the, you know, the mystics of their tribe, and would help their chieftains by using seer magic or spotcraft magic, at which to you know, whatever the chieftain was desiring, safe harvest or a safe journey, whatever the case may be.
And so how do you use all this knowledge that you have to help people psychologically?
That's all of that knowledge that we just talked through about history is kind of conversational, right? It's okay. It really, the only real true connection that it has for anyone, I think, is the value of our ancestry. Okay. And many people, particularly in these modern day times, have kind of forgotten our ancestry. We've left it in the wayside. Yeah, okay, I'm Irish. Yeah, okay, I'm Mexican. But that's where it is, right? And we don't celebrate it. We don't embrace it. And what happens there is that we begin to lose connections with that energy, with that spiritual energy that we're getting every day. What we find in a period of time is people begin to have physical and mental ailments because we're separating from that, because we're getting further away from Mother Earth, or just the spirits of the land, and we're becoming out of balance, right? So we're becoming more physical. We're forgetting about our spiritual growth, and going to church on Sunday is a great step. But if you don't take Sunday seriously, Sunday means nothing. It's just football games, right? So understanding that part of our life does have a very real effect on our physical and mental health helps me to help people understand that, hey, here's how you have to manage this energy, okay? Mm-hmm. And beginning to get that yourself, your total self, back in balance so that you can be healthy, you can be stressless, you can drop that anxiety, kick out that depression, start working out of those negative energies, and begin to kind of feel healthier, feel more robust, feel more energetic. Those types of things are going to come to you when you're more in balance with each other.
Yeah, I completely agree with you on that connecting to your roots thing. To share a little bit about myself, actually. So growing up, I actually didn't know a lot about my ancestors. I didn't really dig deep and find out a lot about them until in my college days, which would have been like my early 20s. And when I did that, it was like I found like a lost part of myself, and everything.
Right?
And everything kind of started making more sense. And I kind of knew like, oh, I know who I am now, and I know which steps I need to start taking in life and things like that.
When I had a vision, this was a couple of years ago, and I was just starting in genealogy as well. I was just beginning to understand mom, dad, grandpa kind of thing, you know, and I was just starting it. And I had a vision, and the vision, it showed where we were all connected to our ancestors in the spiritual realm, like the dice that you use in like games that have just like 20 sides or something. They just multitude of sides. Anyway, each face of this dice had a connection, and then that connection had multitude of connections, and then that one had multitude, and so on and so forth. And you had this huge spiral of connections going in all directions around you. And it was through these dice, lack of a better word, that energy came from our ancestors that was actually piped through us. And like yourself, when I discovered my ancestry, I stumbled upon my ancestry, quite honestly, stumbled upon it doing some very basic genealogy. But at the same time, I was doing history for another reason. I don't remember why. And all of a sudden, the two kind of came together in my research. And I'm like, that's very odd. It's very odd that. And I would then discover there was a paper written about 500 AD that would be updated periodically. and would lead me up until about 1100, where I knew my grandfathers. My grandfathers were written down in a book, and they said, "Yep, this is the guy. He's you know, he's been tried and for outlaw." And in the Norse days, that was the heinous crime, was being an outlaw. Okay. And so he was murdered because he had broken the Icelandic law of being an Ulfhefnar, and so he was murdered. And so, but it was like, I found that document and it was like, oh my gosh, this goes all the way back to my 53rd great grandfather. How lucky is that I would find this document already written? Somebody had already researched it and found it in this other book that had nothing to do with me. I would have never discovered it otherwise. And what I felt when I discovered that was just this bolt of energy. Man, I was jazzed for days, right? I was excited. And for the first time, and I think very much like yourself, I grew up never knowing. My mother and father didn't, for whatever reason, didn't really embrace any part of their culture or their heritage or their ancestors. And we moved around a lot. So it was me, my little brother, and mother and father. And literally, I got to 30 years old. No, I was 37 years old when I discovered I had one cousin. Now, of course, I know I have dozens in a multitude of countries. And every time I talk to them, it's just like I feel this electrified energy coming from them, knowing that we're related. It's like an energy form. But yeah, and then, of course, much later in my life, I discovered my ancestry, and it was like, oh, man, this is great. And so I started picking up things that were more ancestral related. I started teaching my children, hey, this is our culture. This is our heritage. This is what we are as a family. And it just, oh yeah, it was crazy energy, crazy energy. And I loved every minute of it. And I think it's that adoption of our cultural heritage that brings to us this, just this energy to go forth and conquer. One of the other things I found, and this is where I try to use it a little bit with the people that I work with, is I tell them my mantra in my life now is to be the descendant my ancestors would be proud of. You know, I try to live my life as a representative of the family. Chest is out a little bit. Tummy might be tucked in a little, right? You've got that little air of, you know, I'm representing my family here.
Yeah.
And I think that level of pride can help us grow in our self-confidence, grows our self-worth, and we begin to kind of almost as a byproduct, we begin to eliminate negative energies in our mind.
Yeah, it's very empowering stuff, especially if your ancestors were like badasses, you know, and did things that were hard and stuff. It kind of gets you through the tough times in your own life.
That's right. Yes. And it does. It kind of builds that confidence in yourself, knowing that your great grandmother was out there chopping wood in the middle of winter with nothing but her night skirt on because the fire had run out overnight and they had to get it started again or things were going to get bad. You all of a sudden realize that, man, I'm a pansy. It's only 40 degrees. I'm a pansy. And I got to go cut wood. Or I'm running to Safeway to get the box, right, of speed logs or whatever they are. But it really gives you that. And that's the energy that it's just filtering into you.
Do you have a memorable moment or story when you helped somebody overcome their struggles?
I that list is very long at this point.
Too many to count.
Too many to count, but my favorite, and I retell it to many because to me it's so powerful, is that let's see, his little girl is what? She's six now. So it was probably 7 years ago. 7 years ago, a friend of mine suggested that another member of the military community come and visit with me because he was really struggling. Really, he'd reached the bottom. He was drinking. He was very violent. He was just in a bad way. And he came to me and very reluctant at first, very combative, very defensive. And I said, all right, cut the chase. We got to get through this. We got to figure out what's going on and we got to help you out. And we went back and forth week after week and week. I think I saw him for about a year off and on, right? Because he would take these long siestas and to process stuff. And at the time he was also, he quit drinking. So he was, I know he was really focusing on that, trying to wrap his mind and his body around not having that in his system at the time. And so we worked for a year and at the end of the year, he was pretty good. I was pretty happy with him. He was happy again. He was playing softball and he was just a changed person. And he says, you know, I really hate it, but I've got to move down to Georgia. And I was like, you know what, my friend, you are ready. You are ready to go to Georgia. You are ready to have the rest of your life. I mean, he was 26. Yeah, he's like 26 years old. So he's a young man, young. And I said, oh, I hope you have the wonderfulest time. Please let me know, you know, if things are going away and or how things are going and whatnot. Check in with me. Let me know. About three, no, it was 4 years ago. 4 years ago, I get a phone call out of the blue. I mean, it's another day for me, right? You know, and I'm just trunching through the day. Yeah. I get a phone call. He says, and it's him. And he says, hey, what are you doing today? And I was like, yeah, I'm goofing around the house. He says, how'd you like to meet for a cup of coffee? I said, oh, you're back in Anchorage. Hey, great. Yeah, let's get together. He says, we'll meet at Starbucks, right? So I'm not a big Starbucks coffee guy. But anyway, I says, that's perfect. That's fine. We'll go. And so I meet him. And him, he comes in the door. And he comes in with a group of people. And I'm like, wow. Just timing, maybe. He just walked in with this group. And he said, hey, you know, hey, Mark, you know, and we hug and stuff. Because I'm a hugger, by the way. I'm either virtual or real. And he hugs me and we talk for a second and he says, I wanted to introduce you to someone. And I was like, okay. He says, this is my wife.
Mm.
And I was like, I was floored. I was floored because she was the most wonderful person, wonderful energy, wonderful person. And she turns and hands me a baby.
Oh, wow.
A 2-year-old baby. And she says, you know, this is our daughter. And because he had gone through we had been working together for a year. So I had told him, of course, all about being Norse and what that meant and how important it was to me. Anyway, mm-hmm. He says, I want you to provide her with the birth ritual. Because you're that important to me and she's that important to me. And so after I wiped away all my tears, right? Cause I'm a big fella, but I got a heart of gold, right? So I'm clearing the tears and I said, I would absolutely be thrilled to do that. And so I blessed the baby and, we spent a couple of days together and then they went home and of course she's now six and, it was pretty mind-numbing. It was in that moment that I held their baby, because he had sworn off women. He was not having that because he was very abusive and saw women as a very subservient type of view. Mm-hmm. And we had talked about it and we just mulled over. So here was this woman who was his equal partner, and that's how he defined her and that's how he saw her. And it was a beautiful thing. And that moment, I knew exactly that I was on the right path, and this is what I'm supposed to be doing.
That's awesome. That's a wonderful story.
Yeah. And so I have that one in my cap. But there have been so many where I have seen people who have sworn off other people. They just didn't want to deal with it. And just, and just make that turnaround because, they found the same amount of energy, in loving exercises as they did in hateful exercises. And so there's just been journey upon journey upon journey that I've had the honor to be a part of, that where they've really discovered themselves, because ultimately by nature we're designed to be happy. We're designed to have one of these on our face all the time. And we're designed to be comfort and content and joyous and harmonious. That's what we're designed to be. And when we're not, for one reason or another, that's where we find that we start building up this anxiety and this depression. Sometimes we don't even realize that it's building up until we get that big traumatic event, that big showstopper. And we realize that we've allowed these little things to build up in our mind. Now we just don't have the bandwidth for this big thing. And our brain just literally has to dump things. It has to drop it because it can't hold everything. Mm-hmm. And those are the times where, unfortunately, some folks get not broken, but their view, their perspective gets changed to a point where everything that's coming into their brain now no longer makes sense. They just can't, they're not pinning the tail on the donkey anymore. It's just missing. So all they need is help to kind of get clear away some of that stuff, get some of that natural energy coming back into them that restores their balance, that restores this emotional filter that they can then begin make sense of what their eyes, their ears, and their skin is telling them. And that's the big thing there.
Yeah, I love hearing these stories where people's minds change, because it kind of gives you hope for humanity that, we can turn for the better and, head towards the right direction. I'm reminded, and you never know what's going to change you. I heard this story once. There was this guy, he was part of the Ku Klux Klan. He was a white supremacist and everything. And then one day he was just watching TV and his little daughter was next to him. I think she was maybe like 5 years old or something. And she said something racist to the dad. And all of a sudden he just had this realization, like, what am I doing? Like, I've taught my child racism. And as soon as that happened, he changed his ways. So it's always nice hearing stories like that.
Absolutely. And I constantly remind those people I work with and those people I talk to is that we have a choice. We can repeat a cycle that we're caught in. I'm always reminded, people always ask me, particularly as I get ready to publish my second book, they say, you talk about in the book where I was abused as a child. And, did you abuse your child? No, I had a choice. And I chose to understand where they were, to see where they were, and to help them get to where I wanted them to be by explaining why I wanted them to be there. I treated them as an equal human being with an equal intellect that, okay, so maybe the intellect needed a little help. We needed to explain the big college words, especially when they were little. But they were smart. They were intelligent. They could think. They could function. We just needed to explain that to them and help them to understand. And now I would never look at violence as an option except for in a defensive position, right? If my family was being attacked, I was being attacked, something of that nature, then yeah, let's do this. Or as they say in the boxing ring, shall we dance? But I mean, it's just not an answer. The negative energy that's associated with violence is not one of correction. it's one of damnation. And so that's not what I chose to do with my children. They don't need to be that. Yeah. So we each have a choice. We have a choice every time we hear words. If we're in a coffee shop sometime and somebody says something that is just not right, something that, man, that's just wrong. You shouldn't say that to another person, another human being. Mm-hmm. Have you thought about it? And again, then we work on the intellect and say, hey, you know, let me inform and educate and enlighten, because all you're doing is spewing negative energy. And the problem with negative energy is when I say it, you know, you fool, that energy goes out. If it doesn't hit the person whom I'm aiming it at, it hits other people around them. And true. So I could be walking into a store and I get hit with this negative energy. It's like, whoa, man. I'm just feeling grumpy all of a sudden. Why? Well, they were just yelling at each other and probably cursing each other out. Why not? I didn't see that. What I did is I walked into the energy that was still transient and it hadn't dissipated yet. And so I walk into it. Now I'm feeling grumpy. And it's like, whoa, 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 whoa. No, 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 no. We're not doing that. Yeah. And so you got to take a minute, take a breath and just kind of let it go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a lot of times that negative energy you put out, you know, it eventually comes back at you.
Well, a lot of people don't realize that. That's right. Yeah, we send it out and literally we emit the energy out into the universe. And then we take 18 steps and we walk right into it because it's still transient. It's still hanging in the air. And so we walk right into it and it's just like, oh. Now I feel grumpy again. Wait. This is the same grumpy I felt a minute ago. I'm still grumpy. Mm-hmm. No, you're not still grumpy. You're grumpy again because you got rid of it. And so this is really where I talk to some of my friends. I tell them, I say, scream into a pillow.
Mm.
And scream into a pillow facing down.
Mm.
and the reason you do that is that not only are you muffling it greatly, this negative energy, you're also pointing it to the ground. So it's not transient. It's not floating around. Mother Earth can adjust. I mean, she's been fighting us for, what, a couple million years now? She's got this. So she can absorb it and dissipate it. That's what she's going to do. She's just going to dissipate it. And so no harm, no foul, if you will. But nonetheless, that way you're not accidentally offloading your negative energy onto someone else. And so, and then never scream into the pillow that you sleep on.
Why not?
Because it's your potentiality of holding on to that energy. When you sleep, it'll permeate back into your mind.
Okay. Maybe that's why we get nightmares.
It can be pillows, because pillows have a very special place in the human mind and the human heart. And I mean, pillows, it doesn't have to actually be a pillow. I mean, you know, if it's somewhere that you're going to rest your head, you never want to apply any type of negative energy to, because, you know, unlike Febreze can get all the odors out. You can't get the negative energies out. So, and this, you know, you're going to see over the internet where everybody says, oh, use crystals and you can do clearing and cleansing and sage, of course, being the a very old way of doing cleansing. I've had limited success with that. Predominantly, I just say, you know, don't do it in the first place. That way you don't have to clean up your mess.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like wearing a bib on spaghetti night, right? You know, yeah. You're just kind of preparing just for the worst.
Yeah, my mom gave me that advice when she said, just try not to put yourself in a situation where you have to make the choice between two, you know, bad choices or whatever.
Yes. Yeah, and it's true. And again, you know, we always have a choice. So I always tell people, I say, you can choose to be happy. Or you can choose to be affected by your environment. It's up to you. That choice is you. And you can always choose, regardless what's going on, you can always choose to be happy. I'm reminded of the studies that they did for psychology about the men that came back from Vietnam and how they were put into torture chambers, and they were horrible things done to them. And in one case, the one gentleman had mentally gone through his golf steps over and over and over in his mind, every minute little step. And while they were doing such horrible things to him, that's how he kept his mind active and going. Two things he had going for him there, obviously the most powerful energy in the universe, that's the power of hope. And then secondly, is he had trained his brain to set up this golf scenario in such a way. He was a prisoner of war for 8 years, returned, and had picked up a stroke in that 8 years. I mean, he went from, you know, and I'm not a golfer, so I'm going to throw out terms that I have no idea what they really mean, but he went from quote unquote subpar to par. And so even after 8 years of torture, so the human mind can make a choice. It can always choose to be happy, to find joy, to find, to find ways to be harmonious. Mm-hmm. It can always choose that. And it's just us fighting it that gives us our mental challenges, unfortunately.
Yeah. Kind of got reminded of that story in the Gospels where there's that storm and the apostles are all scared and Jesus is there and he's just chilling. You know, he's like, guys, what are you worrying about? And so that kind of reminds me of choosing that positivity in storms and stuff.
That's right. That's exactly right. And knowing it, you know, we can many of us kind of absorb all the energy of that's going on around us. And then we find ourselves at the end of the day, we're just exhausted. You know, we get home and we just collapse in the lazy boy, right? And we're mentally, we're spiritually, we're physically exhausted. We are that way because not only have we been being pounded by all this negative energy, we're letting that happen. We're not doing what we could to say, you know what? No. Not doing that. I got too much going on. I don't have time for that.
Earlier you mentioned that you're working on a second book. How about your first book? What can readers expect to get from your first book?
The first book is a very compact guide, kind of a hands-on spirituality meets science book. It talks about how the physical realm and the spiritual realm can operate at the same time and space. And it talks about human evolution and what human evolution did for our spiritual understandings, for our spiritual growth. Talks about the influences of religion and how that, again, fostered some level of a spiritual control. One of the things I hope that readers take away from that first book, and the real reason I wrote it, was for us to know where we're going to go, where our journey is going. We need to understand where we are.
Okay.
What influences do we have today? So I talk a lot in that book about, the book is called The Turn of Final. And the book talks a lot about the emotional control, on how that energy, how we're doing it to ourselves. I talk about in the book where, you know, we know it takes 3 days to form a habit, right? We're forming a habit by training our brain. So we have a reward system in the brain, and the reward system says, oh, good dog gives the cracker, right? And we go, hey, we got a cracker, cool. And that must be good. So we're going to put that in a good column. And we're going to repeat that action because we know we get the cracker, we're going to feel good. and we continue to do that, we're going to train our brain. In much the same way, we can do it in opposite, you know? So we're in charge of that. Now, the thing that the book also discusses is that there are others out there who want to train your brain for something else.
Hmm.
They want you to be their messenger, whatever it is. Now, I'm not blaming mainstream religion by any stretch, because we know the science of advertising and marketing. That's their job, is they understand how to influence you and how to send that right energy, whether it be the sultry music or the half, you know, dressed person or whatever it is. They know how to kind of influence your thinking into potentially buying their product.
Mm-hmm.
That energy, we have a choice to control or not. And what I find is that people whom come to visit me and they say, you know, I'm really struggling with my life. Lots of things are really hard. They're really challenging. I say, you're making it that way. What you need to do is stop all this negative influence on your mind and start thinking clearly. Once you can start thinking clearly and actually thinking about this stuff, not reacting emotionally, but actually using some intellect and processing this intellectually, we'll begin to reduce the stress, reduce the depression, and get back to our natural state, which is that of joy and relaxation, comfort.
Mm-hmm.
So that book talks about all that, gives some meditation exercises that you can use. It kind of points out to where you want to drill down in your belief systems and understand what you believe and why you believe it. Part of, you know, 2024 years of programming has done for the general population, and how's it now affected your belief systems and what you know to be your truth, your centered truth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like a lot of times we're our own worst enemy.
That's a true statement in many cases, yes.
Yeah.
That's a true statement. But we can also be our hero. And yeah, we have that choice. So all we have to do is make the choice and stick to the choice.
So what do you think the human experience is all about? Why do you think we're here?
Well, you know, I've been explaining this many different ways, and many different people have many different perspectives of this. My goal, in my spiritual journey, my goal is to understand the emotional interactivity that happens all around me all the time. And what do I do? I have to remember that once we depart our physical form and we resort back to our spiritual center, our spiritual self, we're without our sensory input. We can't see, we can't hear, we can't smell, none of that, all that's gone. So we have to rely on those memories that taught us how to feel our way to our descendants or to other spiritual beings. Otherwise, we're going to be all alone, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's nobody there. If we can't talk or can't hear, obviously it's going to be a very lonely time. But as we begin to understand the emotional influences that are happening to us every minute of every day, we can begin to understand how things are going to mean both now and later. And we can reveal that to our descendants so that they are, instead of having to go through the same mire pit that we went through, we're now setting them up for success, right? And whether we're still in physical form and we're an elder, or whether we've departed our physical form and we're using telepathy or some other form of communication, understanding that emotional journey that we all have to go through is super, super helpful for our descendants to then take away their focus from that and now focus on the evolution of humans. They can focus on making the human race that much better. And so that's my personal view of why we're here. That's why I'm told that I'm here and what I do, why I do it. I think, we always have to give credit to the idea that we're all on our very own unique spiritual journey with our own gains and our own discoveries. And those could mean a multitude of things. Whether you're collecting intellect, emotion, imagery, you could be here for a multitude of reasons. And I think part of discovering our spirituality, that comes to the forefront, that becomes kind of a more glaring piece of our then moving forward operation.
Mm-hmm. And so, I guess related to this, what is God to you?
According to what I am taught, God, the gods, deities, are very large collections of energies. They collect both the intellect, the intellectual energy, and emotional energy. So they are all love. They are all happiness. They are all joy. They are all the emotional energy, all bundled into one person, or one collection of energy. They appear to many people in many different ways. They mean different things to many different people. And so for me, it is simply an energy source at which I can draw upon that helps me both with my intellect, learning, growing, knowing, and my emotional control, learning what all the emotions mean and why they mean it and why this person meant that and did this and all of those things. I think they're just like giant libraries, if you will, of these different types of energies at which I can better translate my life.
That's cool. I've never heard of like God or gods being referred to libraries. That's an interesting idea.
Well, I mean, think about it. In the beginning, according to the information I've been given, in the beginning there was nothing, right? There was the void. We know that every book talks about that. Any spiritual, religious, anything book says in the beginning nothing. But we know that nothing means not exactly nothing. It means that there's nothing that we can put our finger on. That's what nothing means. So in the stories that I've been taught, we have energy particles, much like we have today with atomic structures. We have atoms. Atoms will come together and they will collide. And many of them will, cohese or
bond, kind
of interlock together. They will lock in together, and in the case of the deities, those were the first two that took all of the energy from the void and bundled them together. Now in my beliefs, in my understandings, there's two, because we have balance. We always have balance. Some of the particles and the energy particles would have represented a more tight binding together, holding things tight, and that would have been the masculine energy. And then the feminine energy, while is bound fairly tight, also has space in it. It has space for emotional energy, and it collected the emotional energy. And this is really where we see the nurture versus nature. But those energy sources, then I receive an equal amount a day of masculine energy versus feminine energy. Feminine energy just means that I have feelings too. Masculine energy means that I can open a pickle jar for my wife when she asks for it. That's the way I look at it. But ultimately, these entities have all the intellect of all that will ever be. And so what they're accepting from us, because within each particle of energy that they then shed to make all the spiritual entities that became physical forms, is they have one atom inside a spiritual entity. Spiritual entity then puts an atom in a physical form. So ultimately, the physical form has a direct connect back to the deity.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And they can draw upon that connection. They can draw for intellect, for emotional understanding, for imagery, for things that, you know, they need. And so that's what's really important about maintaining our spiritual connection, is maintaining that connection to our deities.
Okay. You spoke about masculine and feminine energies. I feel like these days there's, I think, some confusion going around, or at least there's questioning about what truly is masculine energy, what truly is feminine energy, and do I have it, do I not have it? So what advice would maybe you give to people that maybe want to reconnect with their, I guess, maybe born energy, and maybe if they're exploring?
The thing that we have to always keep in mind is, do not connect the what we call gender of energy signals with the gender of the physical form. They're not connected.
Okay.
Because there are some days, there have been kings throughout history that have decorated themselves. They have put jewelry on. We see the pharaohs with their really cool headdress.
Yeah.
They wanted to feel attractive. Many would consider that to be a feminine thing in a gender type of conversation.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. It's okay for me, a very large Norse bearded man, to some days just want to feel pretty. And that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
There are other days when my wife wants to strangle me because I'm doing something around the house that's just driving her crazy. And she says, I'm going to strangle you. And, you know, I outweigh my wife by, you know, a couple hundred pounds. So that's not happening. But it's that masculine gender, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You can't connect those two things. And that's where the confusion lies, I think. You know, our physical form is our physical form. You know, I'm not here to argue. I'm just here to observe just like everybody else. Energy coming into us, promoting this idea of stereotyping, stereotyping didn't come around until we see mainstream monotheistic religions start in roughly mid 500s, 600s. And then even then it struggled because, you know, in my culture, in Scandinavia, pre-Christian, it was very much an equal society. Women carried the same ability to vote, ability to divorce, ability to have her own money. You know, they carried every right a man did. They went to battle in many cases with the men. And of course, it's where we get the stories of Valkyries and some of the other wonderful women throughout history who have picked up a sword and done what was necessary to keep themselves and their family safe. So we can't construe these momentary emotional energy patterns with the gender of the physical form. They're different. They're completely separate conversations. However, I agree with you. I think many people in modern day times, yeah, we got some fuzziness going on here.
Yeah. Well, hopefully things start clearing up. All right, well, Mark. Oh, go ahead.
I hope so. I hope so, because, you know, it's this experience we're given, and we're given it for a reason, and we need to embrace that reason and grow through it. And, you know, when you start tampering with it, that's where things are going to get a little south.
Yeah, I agree. All right, Mark, my last question for you. What advice would you like to leave for young individuals that are interested in getting into the same kind of work that you do?
The listen to your heart. And I say that earnestly, because a lot of times we listen with our ears and then we listen with our imagination. We think we hear, we think we know, we think. And the problem with that is, as we talked earlier, you have so many influences that that's a sketchy proposition at best. The best thing to do as you go about your spiritual journey and learning about it, and beginning to get into it, firstly, stop all this stuff, get all the stuff out of your head and listen with your heart. Your heart will tell you where to go and what to do. And the second piece, which I think is equally important, and I very much am thrilled that you have already experienced this as well, and that is to begin to embrace our ancestors. I know in many cases, many people have come to me and they've said, oh, it's so hard to find my ancestry and this, that, and the other thing. Your heart will lead the way. Let it do what it's supposed to do. Investigate, bring them into your life, start thinking about them, start sending them energy, and they will send you energy. And you will find that those things that are challenging you today will just not be as challenging tomorrow.
All right, Mark, before I let you go, where can people find you or connect with you?
The best place to find me and all of my teachings, as well as my videos and everything that we've put out on the web, is at our main website, which is https://akulshefnar.com. The easier way to get there is our parent site, which is my counseling site, and that's akoutlaw.com. And that site has a link to AK Ulf Hefnar, because many people forget the D is really a TH in Old Norse, so it's okay. But in the website is a great place to begin a communication with me and actually learn what I'm all about and certainly begin your own journey.
All right, Mark, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you, sir.